Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Success Circle Call. This is Lisa Manini with Accelerate Associates, and I'm so glad that you're here. I want to welcome all new Success Circle members. If this is the first time, this is a Business Accelerator Call, and the purpose of this call is to dive deeper into one of the elements of the systems approach to profitability, which is either mastering your inner entrepreneur, systematizing or monetizing your business, or executing your business blueprint. I also want to welcome our Profitability Lab members who are also listening in. So thank you so much for being here. As you know, we meet every first Tuesday of the month, and I just want to let you know about some upcoming events. There will be no Profitability Lab introduction in July, but there is one coming up in August 13th to be exact. So if you're interested in finding out what the Profitability Labs are all about, you're not a Profitability Lab member, come to one of the introductions. And again, that's going to be August 13th in Michigan. That starts at 8:30. We are also going to be hosting an online Profitability Lab. So regardless if you're in Michigan or close to, we're going to also have an online interactive one. So stay tuned for that and make sure that you read the Accelerate Success Institute newsletter that you get with this recording, and more information will be available there. I also want to flag you to make sure that you put on your calendars April 28th and 29th, 2016, for the annual Wake Up Profitable Boot Camp for Business Owners, which is going to be held in Michigan this year. I know last year we held it, this past year we held it in Hawaii. We're not going to have it there next year, though, but it's going to be fun nonetheless. You will enjoy it. And today I want to get right in and welcome my guest, Cindy Ashton. Now, Cindy, for those of you that don't know Cindy, Cindy Ashton is a speaking voice and presentation skills trainer. She's a singer, entertainer, and speaker with over 15 years of experience touring and training all over North America on multiple platforms. And she really rejects that old model of posing and gesturing that turns people into robots. Her work goes a lot deeper to get her clients to unleash their natural, your natural magnetism and connect authentically. So you can see why I brought her here today to talk to you. She's received numerous awards, both from President Obama and the Queen of England for her lifetime of volunteerism, and has appeared in multiple media, including on the front page of Lifestyle section of The Times and in Performance Magazine, along with Donald Trump. So please welcome Cindy Ashton.
Hello, Lisa, and hello, everybody. I'm absolutely delighted to be here with all of you today. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you, Cindy. Now, today, you're going to let us know how to assess your voice to discover if it's pushing people away or engaging them. You're going to share with us how to use your voice to capture the attention of anyone that you're talking to, and really become keenly aware of body language to ensure that you're presenting yourself with that magnetism, with that confidence. And I just can't wait to do that. But share with us a little bit about you and why you are considered the unconventional speaker trainer.
That's a great question. So the traditional, you know, in 2012, Forbes magazine really, they released an article saying that people should avoid going to speaker trainers because of the fact that you leave feeling less authentic than ever with lots of poses and gestures and speech effects to practice. And when I read this article, I was jumping up and down because I am so against that way of teaching. I am definitely unconventional, and that's because I don't believe that we're robots. And a lot of the training out there is really about, well, pay attention that you don't do too many ums, and pay attention that you turn your body this way and that you breathe here and that you, oh my gosh, and slap on a smile. It's all very robotic and fake. And nobody ever wants to connect like that, and nobody wants to deal with a robot. And so I'm a real believer in going within yourself and really unleashing your natural magnetism and who you really are, and bring out all your faults and your quirks and all your great stuff, and just bring out all of you and let that be the thing that presents you well and be the connector as a presenter.
Now, everybody at some point in their business is going to present, whether it's presenting an idea, whether it's presenting a product or a service that you offer, whether it's selling an idea to your staff or, you know, someone else, how important is the speaking voice in how people perceive you?
That's an excellent point, because even when you're not even specifically presenting an idea or a pitch, you are presenting yourself all the time, and we don't realize that. So let me give you a bit of a story about how important the voice is. So I had a client come to me 2 years ago, and she filled out a form and her saying that she was told that she needs to be a better presenter. And when I looked at her website, I was like, wow, great branding, great marketing, great messaging. She's got all the right call to actions. And yet in her application, she says she's struggling to convert more than 4% on the phone. And I'm like, that's interesting. So I knew that it had to be in the way that she was presenting herself, because her marketing looked great. So I went in on the call, and the minute I heard her voice, I knew it was her voice. So she went on the call, and she's like, "Hi, Sydney, it's really great to meet you." And I'm like, oh my word, no wonder you're not getting any work. And it was really, I mean, she was speaking right on her vocal cords. Her voice was not vibrant. It was stuck at the back of her throat, and she was gripping the throat. And so her voice was shaking as she spoke, and I couldn't do the exact replica because I'm such a trained speaker and singer, but her voice was shaking, and it made her sound really insecure and unconfident. How can anybody invest their money and their time with you if you sound like you're unsure? And so we did literally 6 weeks of half-hour sessions, and she went from converting 4% on the phone to 40%.
That's a huge shift. Yeah, for sure.
Right, because everything else was in place. I mean, everything else that she was doing was right. There was no reason why she shouldn't have been converting. It was simply because she was presenting herself badly as not her best self.
What is one of the things that you shared with her to do differently?
That's an excellent question. So part of her issue is that, boy, there is a lot of stuff I want to share, but part of it is that her voice was stuck at the back of the throat. So we want to have vibrancy in our voice. And vibrancy comes when we shift the sound to be vibrating from our face. So if everybody listening, if you're not in public around people, although you can do this in public if you like, they might just think you're a little cuckoo, but if you're in private, I want you to just hum with me and feel if you feel a vibration anywhere in your face or your body. So we're just going to hum. And just see, do you feel your nose vibrating? Is it your mouth? Is it your chest? Is it your throat? Is it your head? So let's try that again and pay attention. Ready? And hum. Now, the really interesting thing is that when we learn to shift that sound, we're not going to hum at people, obviously, all day, but we want to shift the sound to be in our face, and we want to shift it to be around our mouth and our cheeks and our nose without being nasal. So I always get my clients as one of the exercises to do things like vroom, vroom, vroom. So V's and M's and N's, and it gets you really beautifully forward in your face, and then you transfer it to different words. So zoop, zoo, zealous, whatever you can think of, those vowels and those consonants, and you just get them from your mouth. So mother. So instead of saying mother at the back of the throat, mother, my mother was walking across the street. This is much more resonant up here versus my mother was walking across from the street, which is stuck back at the throat.
Which sounds very flat. Yeah.
It's very flat and it's very monotone. And the thing is that when you start to do the resonance or the vibrancy exercises, there's a whole pile, but that will get you started. When you start to do those, then you start to also play with pitch, like high versus low. And suddenly when you're having a conversation, you're not talking in one tone and staying at the same place and have no vibrancy. Suddenly you can bring things up for excitement and bring them down to pull you in. So suddenly it gives you a better dynamic range to be able to use that voice in a way that engages people.
So let's talk about the speaking voice patterns. And what are the most common, are there common ones, and, you know,
yes,
how do they come
absolutely
across?
Yeah, so this is going to be related to what you're doing in your body. For whatever reason, we seem to think that we don't realize that what's happening in our body is directly affecting our speaking voice. And so you can be posed and gestured all you want, but if you're carrying tension in your body, depending on where you're carrying that tension, it's going to make your voice sound a certain way. So let's talk about what those ways are. So people who hold a lot of chest tension and try to stand up tall, listen to what happens to my voice, okay? I'm going to put some chest tension in me. All right, so Lisa, I have tension in my chest right now, and I'm trying to stand tall. So what is my voice sounding like to you right now?
Very stressed. To me, it's
very
like,
stressed and
yeah.
very aggressive.
Yeah.
It's a very aggressive voice. And the minute you get stress in the chest, and the majority of people hold all their stress in their chest, once you're holding that stress in your chest, if you're also trying to stand tall and your shoulders are back, it causes your throat to grip, and it causes your voice to go higher in pitch and louder. And if you're sounding really aggressive, it's going to either turn people off and they don't want to hear you, or it's going to sound like you're yelling at them and that you're trying to be too aggressive and bully them, which is going to turn them off, or they're going to feel bullied even though you're not trying to, and they become your client, but then it's not a good relationship because it went in with that underlying, oh, I feel like I have to do this because I'm going to yell at. So that's one of the patterns. Did you have a question on that one before I move on to the next one?
No, go ahead.
So let's say that you have stress in your chest, but you're a sloucher, and women with big breasts tend to be slouchers because they're holding all that weight on their chest. So it's really easy for them to collapse. And also people who are grieving tend to also collapse their chest. Mm-hmm. So notice now what happens when I slouch. Hi, Lisa, it's Cindy. Let's have a conversation and let's see if you can trust me to hire me to do something.
Yeah.
What just happened? What happened to my voice?
Lack of confidence.
Exactly. It got quieter. It's very hard for the air to pass through from the diaphragm, up through the trachea, into the cords, and out of your mouth when you are collapsed in that way and you're not in alignment. So all of a sudden, the voice gets smaller. Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating, this stuff. We don't think about it, but it's all these little shifts. I find with a lot of my clients, they don't need months and months with me. They can do a VIP weekend with me, and it's fixed. It's done. Because of the fact that it's little minor shifts that we do in the body and the voice that makes all the difference and has a far greater impact.
Mm. Wow. And those are just little shifts, but they made a big difference in how you just communicated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you want more patterns
so
of the voice or do you want to move on?
Well, yeah. Give us one more.
Okay. And then why didn't I show you the one that actually is really good to have?
Okay. Yeah.
Because it's like, all right, well, we know what not to do, Cindy. Now what do we do? So with people, so what's really interesting is that a lot of us, because we live super stressful lives, mm-hmm. We tend to hold our breath a lot because that's where we're holding our stress. People who hold their breath in their speech patterns. So if you were to close your eyes and just breathe and notice, you would notice if you were stressed and holding your breath, you would notice you were actually holding your breath
mm-hmm.
during parts of, see, I just did it. I just held my breath. Oh, mm-hmm. see. During parts of the cycle, you'll notice that, oh, I hold my breath here. So when you're holding your breath, it causes you to sound exhausted in your speech pattern. So I'm just going to have some holding of the breath right now, Lisa, as I'm talking to you. I sound very labored and I sound very tired and I don't sound like a very enthusiastic and energetic person.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have that breath that's continually going through the phrase.
Mm-hmm.
We're not taught how to breathe in North America. I don't think we're taught how to breathe anywhere in the world.
Well, what is it when you say we're not taught how to breathe? What do you mean by that?
Well, some babies, if we're born as healthy babies, we're breathing. Our breathing pattern is beautiful. We're fine. But we take on, based on our environment and our stressors, we end up getting into bad vocal habits and bad. So we're not actually taught how to use our breath. We're not taught how to use that breath to carry a sentence. We're simply not taught how to use our body language and our voices in school. We're taught math and science. And while all that's good and fine, you can have all that knowledge, but if you don't know how how to use your voice and your body in a way that connects with other people and delivers your message clearly, it really holds you back in your life.
Now, how can somebody assess whether or not their speaking voice is either attracting people or repelling people? Is there a...
Yeah, there is. So let's talk about that, and then I want to talk about the healthy speaking voice.
Okay, great.
So, yeah, there's different ways. So first of all, sometimes you just get feedback from people, but most people aren't bold enough to tell you that you're too nasal or that your voice is too, you know, most people aren't aware of it or they're not going to be bold enough to tell you.
Right.
So there's a few different ways. Part of it is that you can assess what your results are. Things like when you're networking, are you finding that people are staying with you and communicating? Great. Your voice and your body language and what you're saying is probably great. If you find that people are always trying to get away from you, or if they're always fidgeting, or if their arms are crossed, they're not receiving you.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be your voice, it might be your body language, it could be the way that you are speaking or joking, it could be a lot of things, but in general, your presentation style needs to be improved if you find that people are not staying with you in a conversation, they're shuffling in some way, they're fidgeting, or their arms are crossed or their legs are crossed. Those are really good indicators, and again, you're going to have the occasional person who just doesn't resonate with you. I mean, I'm obviously a very strong presenter, and some people just don't resonate with me, but if you're finding that this happens a lot, it's definitely your presentation style. From a more practical standpoint of assessing, one of the things you can do is really start to notice your breathing. And there's three assessments I love to do that will give you an idea of where you're at, because your breathing is going to directly affect where the stress is in your body and how your voice comes across. So the first exercise I already told you, which was to close your eyes and just notice in your breathing pattern, when you're inhaling and you're exhaling, you're going to have a natural pause at the end of each of those cycles. So you take an inhale, and a slight pause, and exhale, slight pause, and inhale. Now, you're not going to be as deliberate as I am at this point, but it's more about when you close your eyes, with your natural breathing pattern, are you holding your breath in any places? So that's the first thing you want to notice, with, of course, the natural lift in between the exhale and the inhale. The second assessment is while you have your eyes closed, you want to count how many counts does it take to do your inhale and your exhale.
Why is that?
I'm going to tell you. So if you're balanced, so if you're breathing in for two and breathing out for two, or breathing in for three and exhaling out for three, whatever you're doing, if you've got an even number of counts on either end, you're a really healthy breather. And if you're not holding your breath, you're a really healthy breather. And it means that air is flowing freely through your body. And it means that your oxygen goes in and your carbon dioxide, all those toxins are being exhaled. Because if you're not able to exhale all your carbon dioxide, you end up with toxins that are left over in your body that are ready to be exhaled, and then it makes you sluggish and tired.
Mm.
And people don't realize, I've had clients who are chronically tired, and when they're done learning how to breathe and they have their morning and evening routine with me, they overall have tons more energy. That's why people who go to yoga have more energy, because they're breathing consciously.
Mm.
So when you have the even inhales and exhales without the holding of the breath, then it allows the voice to be more relaxed because you're in a relaxed, homeostatic, good, healthy place. However, if you are inhaling long and then and exhaling short, that puts you in a state of hyperventilation, which stimulates the sympathetic nervous system, which speeds up your heart rate, it makes your mind race, which makes you more confused, it makes your muscles tense. So if you're not breathing correctly and you tend to be inhaling too much air without exhaling all those toxins, that's what's going to happen, is suddenly you're going to find yourself talking faster, you're going to be confused, your mind is going to be all over the place, you might get more muscle tension. On the opposite end, this is a great thing. If you exhale longer than your inhale, you stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system, which relaxes your mind, makes it really focused. It smooths out your muscles, calms your heart rate. Now, we don't want people exhaling longer than their inhale 24/7 because it's going to put them into zombie mode, right? Everyone's going to be like fast asleep. So you don't want to put people to sleep, but it's definitely an excellent technique to use when you find that you're rushing, when you find that you're speaking too fast, when you find that you're not able to focus, when you find that you're nervous and you need to calm down before you enter the room or get on a call or go on stage if you're presenting. It's a great tool to have, but in general, you don't want to be in such a relaxed state all day. You're never going to get anything done.
Right.
So those are your three, no, those are two of the three assessments.
That's
so, awesome. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
So the third assessment that you want to do is put one hand on your chest and one hand on your belly. And on your inhale, just notice, is your chest rising up, is your belly rising up, or is it a little bit of both? Now, when most people do this, what they end up doing is they end up trying too hard and going, oh, I have to consciously breathe. And they go, and they do this crazy amount of breathing, and then it ends up not being the right assessment. So again, just let yourself do a few breaths before you really assess it so that you make sure that you're calm. So ideally, you want to be breathing into your stomach when you are breathing in your chest. So when your chest rises when you inhale, what that means is that you're not fully breathing into the bottom of your lungs, which is really bad also for your carbon dioxide because it's not getting exhaled and you're not getting enough oxygen into your full body. So when we take a breath in, if we're breathing correctly, then we're breathing from the bottom of our lungs, which naturally pushes the diaphragm down. When the diaphragm gets pushed down, it pushes your gallbladder, your liver, your kidneys, all that stuff. It pushes it all down. So when we say that we're breathing in our stomach, we're technically not. What we're doing is we're breathing in our diaphragm. The diaphragm pushes down and our stomachs go out because it's pushing our organs down. So when you're breathing from the bottom of your ribs and your stomach goes out, you're breathing oxygen fully into your lungs, which allows that blood to circulate throughout your body and it exhales all your toxins. So when you're breathing only in your chest, it means you're only breathing through half of your lungs. You're only using half your lung capacity and you're causing yourself exhaustion from the toxins, which is part of the problem. But what's also happening is when you're breathing your chest, it's creating tension in your chest. And that stress and that tension in your chest relates back to your voice, as we talked about earlier, in terms of either sounding too aggressive or too insecure and soft. So ideally, what we want to be doing is breathing naturally in our diaphragms. And you obviously cannot be consciously breathing all day. But if you learn to train yourself to breathe consciously every morning and night for 10 minutes just lying in bed and really learn to know what that sensation is in your stomach and filling it up, then after a while you'll start to notice during the day that, oh, I'm really not breathing in the right place. I'm going to take a moment and get recentered. And eventually learning how to repattern your breathing will happen.
Wow. Wow, those are really great tips. I've heard when you lay on your back is when you're really breathing naturally through your diaphragm.
Thank you for bringing that up. So for those of you already in your stomach, fantastic. Keep working on deepening that to the pelvic floor, and I'll tell you why after, but I want to finish this first point. But going with what Lisa says, when you're lying in bed, she's absolutely right, because gravity just takes the stomach up and down, whereas when you're standing, it takes a lot more effort because it's not in alignment with gravity. So the best way to learn to breathe, like Lisa said, is just to lie in your bed. Put your hand on your belly. Start to notice the sensation. Notice the stretch. And just really start to count in for four, out for four. Get yourself really conscious with your breathing. Do a muscle scan, notice where you hold tension. Just even doing that for your everyday well-being is always a smart thing to do.
Yeah, I notice when I'm really focused on something, I forget to breathe. And so, yeah, that's a problem.
Right, and I bet you get tired faster.
Well, I forget to breathe. I'm like, oh, I'm not breathing, and then I take a deep breath. So I'm always, going around. People say, well, what's wrong? Nothing's wrong. Why?
You have amazing. Well, your speaking voice is excellent. It's just so resonant and so full. It's really a great speaking voice. So obviously what you're doing in your lifestyle is making a difference.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. Well, it's interesting. I still struggle with the ums, right? Still struggle with the ums. I'm an ums person.
can we talk? I want to talk about the pelvic floor, but let me talk about the ums first. Can we talk about that?
Sure, yeah.
All right, so I struggle with the like, oh my gosh, did you see this? Like, this is so cool. So I do the same thing. First of all, we're human, okay? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing is when you have to present, it's really important to really know exactly what you're going to say. So I know that there's methodologies out there that tell you to count your ums when you're presenting. I think that's going to cause you more stress and really put your mind in a place that's trying to focus on that, whereas focusing on your message and what you want to say is going to eliminate the ums. A lot of people are not prepared with their talking points. I always tell my clients and help my clients to really come up with what are the top 10 objections that people always come up with when it comes to buying from you. Great. And what are the top 10 things that they need to know that will give them some kind of an insight or a shift or an awareness that makes them understand more and on a deeper level why they need you? And so what are the trends coming in the future that you are, you know, the trendsetter on that you could solve for them? So we actually come up with all kinds of talking points, and then we develop stories and tools around them. So by the time my clients are done with me, they are so crystal clear on all their talking points that very rarely do they ever get thrown off in a conversation, because they could be asked anything and they would have an answer for it because they've thoughtfully thought through it. Mm-hmm. And they've come up with quick scenarios and talking points. It's kind of like doing media training, mm-hmm. but it's really the same type of thing. We simply do not prepare our content in advance.
Yeah.
And when we do that and when we practice it in partners and with friends and all that jazz, what ends up happening is that we simply put ourselves in a position where we're prepared in most situations. And when we're not prepared, like we're asked a question in a networking thing, then you simply say, that's an excellent question. You know, I want to give you a really thoughtful answer, so let me get back to you on this. There's absolutely nothing wrong with saying that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also hearing you say, too, that it's natural for you to say like, and it's
yes.
natural for people to sometimes say and being prepared with it is going to help with that. But it's going to be also natural for you to say that every once in a while.
Absolutely. I don't know why we're trying to beat out of us our little habits. Now, obviously, the habits are bad, I'm just always talking like that. Like, that's a real problem. But if I say like, except for when I was deliberately doing it, if I say like maybe 5 times in this hour-long interview, then I'm doing fine. It's just part of my natural speech. But as long as, so yes, it's a balance of knowing your talking points, and that if the occasional so like or something else comes out, it's just part of who you are, and that's totally amazing because it makes you human.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've given us assessments of the speaking voice and really understanding that speaking voice. What, and you've also given us some exercises people can do to speak more persuasively.
Yes.
So talk about the resonators, because I've heard you talk about resonators.
Right. I actually covered those. So the resonators are the vibrancy that we were talking about earlier. So they are like, if you look at a drum, oh, I just said like again. but they are, if you look at an instrument, all instruments have resonators. So a trumpet resonates through the horn. A drum resonates through the bottom of that drum where the opening is. We all have resonators and openings. The openings are the spaces in our head, in our cheeks, in our back of our head. They're the spaces in our body where we can resonate the sound. So earlier, when I had talked about where do you vibrate your sound, that's what I was talking about, all the zzzz and all that. That's what I was talking about.
Okay, great. Great. Now,
yeah.
How long-term, how does someone maintain a good vocal health?
Excellent question. So good vocal health. So one of the things you want to do is make sure that you're not over-abusing your voice. I know some coaches that stay on the phone and do 10 sessions a day. I'll never do more than 3 sessions a day. That's it, because my voice is my gift, and it has to sound resonant and vibrant, and if I do that many sessions a day, I'm going to be exhausted, and I'm going to end up with vocal damage. So it's important to pace yourself. I know that some people pace themselves by doing all their calls on one day and then have all of work days on another day and or planning days. I would suggest that you break that up because your voice is going to get tired. When your voice gets tired, then you go into bad habits that start to, you know, for example, if your voice gets tired, you might go back in your throat and start ripping. When you get that muscle tension, then it causes you more exhaustion, and then it becomes a pattern that becomes repetitive and ends up causing you long-term exhaustion and damage and imbalance. So part of it is just learning not to over-abuse your voice. Part of it is if you do have to use your voice a lot, so for example, when I'm on tour, like I had a situation in September where I had 9 speaking engagements in 12 days in 2 different countries in 3 different cities. It
Whoa.
Was insane.
Wow.
I know. So I had to take vocal rest. I would just say, hey, 3 to 6 o'clock, I'm not having a conversation with anybody. I'm not saying a peep. And if somebody comes up to me, I will write them a note. So I would just build in 3-hour vocal rests whenever I possibly could. So that's part of it is if you have vocal damage or if you're working or if you have to work your voice a lot, then it's important to take vocal rests and absolutely no talking. It's fun. You can get a blackboard out. You can you can play mime and charades. The other thing is watching what you eat and what your patterns are. Obviously, drugs and alcohol and smoking is going to kill you. Probably not good for your health anyways, especially terrible for your voice. You have to figure out, not you specifically, of what triggers your voice. So for me, gluten is killer. Mm-hmm. If I have gluten in my diet, my voice gets mucusy, mm-hmm. and it just doesn't sound vibrant. It sounds like a very dull, monotone voice. So I avoid gluten at all costs, and I avoid dairy at all costs. For some people, they tend to be prone to acid reflux. When you have acid reflux, it comes up into the voice, and it causes irritation. And so with the irritation, then you start gripping the throat, then it starts sounding raw, it doesn't sound resonant, it sounds aggressive. So if you tend to be prone to acid reflux, avoid having a lot of acidic foods like oranges and grapefruits and tomatoes, or if you are just an acid mongrel, cut it down. Otherwise, that's what's going to happen. Things that are really great for the voice, if you need a quick fix, like you have a cold or you need to be able to speak on a voice that might be raw, aside from vocal rest, slippery elm bark is awesome. Slippery elm bark, E-L-M, slippery elm bark. That spray, that the oil of oregano spray, that stuff burns like a bitch. Pardon my language. It's brutal. But if you, it is. But it kills everything, and that's great for your voice. Like I did an what else is good for your voice? There's all kinds of honey. Okay, so every hour, if you have a chest cold or any kind of cold, every hour, not piping hot, but very warm water with lemon and honey. So the lemon is going to cut through the mucus, and the honey is going to help soothe some of the acid.
Yeah, I've got a really great trick, especially when you're traveling, and it works almost every time. I was getting that, you know, the tinge in your throat when you all of a sudden swallow and you thought, oh, no, I'm getting sick? Apple cider vinegar. Almost every kitchen, restaurant, hotel that has a restaurant has apple cider vinegar in it. Ask for a little apple cider vinegar, mix it with water, and take it until with water. You don't want to breathe while you do it, though, because it tastes really nasty. However, what I found is when you drink it, you can have a couple of glasses a day and still be fine. It's not going to hurt you. It just doesn't taste really great. However, it will take the tinge away within about 24 hours.
Wow, so that's a new one for me. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, because it's acidic. That's why you want to mix it with water, just a capful with a glass of water. And it's acidic, and usually if you're getting a virus or something, they can't live in an acidic environment. And
right.
So that's one of the health advantages to having apple cider vinegar. So a popular organic brand is called Bragg's. And that seems to really work. I suppose you could put a little bit of honey in it, too, to make it taste okay. I just hold my breath and down the glass of water with it, and it seems to work really well.
That's fantastic. That's a really, really great – that's a great one.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
I also want to talk to you because we've got people that are listening that are different stages of speaking. So some are going to be speaking as CEOs of the organization. Others are going to be professional speakers. Some are just getting started. So I want to really identify first, the first question is dealing with stage fright, mentally, emotionally, and physically. Suggestions?
Yes, absolutely. So let's talk mentally. Well, the first thing, and this goes back to what we talked about earlier, you need to be prepared and really rehearsed. And people don't rehearse enough. They just don't. They do their talking points and they think that if they've got their sheets up there, they're going to be fine. You have to get to the point where you are so comfortable with what you want to say that it is like walking and breathing to you. It's really simply, you would never expect an Olympic athlete to go under the ice and skate a gold star performance without rehearsing. And for whatever reason, as speakers, we feel like if we prepare our notes and run at once, we're good to go. And it's just not enough. You have to rehearse it to the point where it just becomes part of you. And that goes back to, you know, making your top 10 list and creating your stories. And the more that you tell them, the more you deliver your content, it becomes really easy. I want to be clear, I'm not saying that you should write a script and memorize it, because you're going to feel really inauthentic and you're going to be so stressed trying to remember every single word. But what you do want to do is be prepared by having a very structured flow and be very clear on your talking points and run it 10 times. If you run it at least 10 or 15 times, it's going to take away half of your nerves because you're so comfortable with material. So the next thing you want to do after that, so that's that part. The other thing that I love to do in terms of when you're having body stress, one of the strategies I gave you earlier was exhaling longer than your inhale. So, and really exhaling that air right down into your feet. Imagine that you've got roots at the bottom of your feet and those roots dig right down, 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 into the ground and anchor you down and just continue to breathe and exhale nice and long into that area. Another thing you can do for nerves is what I love to call a sensory trigger. So being the performer, singer, dancer, actor, when you go through training, you learn something called sensory trigger. So you as the viewers, when you're watching a play or you're watching something on TV, you either are drawn into the drama and it's completely truthful from the actor, or you go, oh, this is terrible, they're fake acting, right?
Wow, yeah.
Right. So as you're going through your development as an actor, we develop something called sensory triggers. And sensory triggers is something that gets you to naturally be able to get into the right emotional state without you pretending. So, for example, most speaking training is like, you want to be confident, you stand up straight and you smile. And I'm like, but if you're feeling like poop inside, that's going to read subconsciously.
Right.
We're very intuitive beings. So what a sensory trigger does is it's something that's going to trigger you into the emotion that you want to feel. So let me give you some examples. So it could be a song, it could be a memory, it could be something that you touch, it could be a kinesthetic movement you do. So for example, I'll give you a couple of client examples. So one of my clients in Switzerland, she was like terrified to pick up the phone. She had such terrible nerves. And I said, since you're a visual person, I want you to think of something in your life that happened that was absolutely hilarious. What's the first thing that comes to your mind? She goes, oh, that moment when my daughter opened up when I was looking for my daughter and I opened up the closet door and she jumped out and she had chocolate all over her face and she was 4 years old and she goes, hello, mommy, and she just burst out laughing every single time she thinks of that memory. So now I have my client dial the phone number before she presses send, think about that memory, and then press send. And the minute that she does that, she's so busy being enthralled in her joy that she's like, hi, it's blah, 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 I'm calling because, and she's too busy being in her joy of that moment to be nervous. So that's one example of a sensory trigger.
That's brilliant.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's great.
Thank you. Do you want more examples?
Yes,
please. Okay. So I have a client who's down in Houston. He's a sweetheart. He's in the top 10 percentile in the commercial real estate field. And he could not get to that top one percentile. And he's like, I'm just not an alpha male. I'm not that big, strapping 6'3" man that walks in and goes, hello, everybody, and commands, you know, the Tony Robbins commanding a room. And he says, how do I be powerful and confident? So for him, he didn't need joy or happiness. For him, he needed to be triggered into confidence and power. And so I said, what's a really, really proud moment in your life where you just think about this thing and you think, I did it? He says, my new house with that grand staircase. I said, great. So your vision is that grand staircase. And because you're a kinesthetic person, we need you to move. So for him, he literally closes his eyes. He imagines his front door. He literally takes his hand and reaches out and opens the door. So it's visual, but it's also kinesthetic because he's actually physically mimicking doing it. He steps into the hallway, even if he's not home. He just, wherever he is, he steps, he imagines and actually physically pretends to step into the hallway. He opens his eyes. He sees his grand staircase. He makes it fit. He goes, yes. And the minute that he does that, he feels totally in his power. He comes out of the bathroom or his office, wherever he was doing that visualization and movement, and he just goes right into the boardroom and he kicks ass now. For me, I sing and I dance. If I need to be put into a mood, I sing and I dance.
Okay. So is that, would you consider that something emotional or more physical?
It's emotional.
Okay,
the sensory trigger is actually, yeah, you're right. Thank you for bringing that up. So from a physical standpoint, you got to ground yourself, exhale longer than your inhale. From a mental standpoint, you need to be super rehearsed, like breathing and walking. And from an emotional standpoint, you need to have a really strong sensory trigger. So for all of you listening, you can totally try. Pick about 5 different ones and play with them over the next week or two and see before you get on the phone with somebody, before you go into a meeting, you always want to be in the right emotional space, especially if you're having a really, really awful day. So I can tell you in November, I was like deathly sick. I was so sick. Mm-hmm. And I just used that trigger. I have a song that's the theme song for my business. That's from Gloria Gaynor, not I Will Survive. It's I am what I am and what I am. Needs no excuses. It's all about, you know, kicking ass of who you are, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I just, you know, I just listened to this song before I went on stage and I ended up making $40,000 in sales. And I was like bronchitis. Like I was so sick, but I was able to get into the right emotional state that I was still able to deliver and close $40,000 in sales. So that's just how powerful this is that even if you're having a horrible day or you're really sick, getting into the right emotional state will get you to that next level of vibration.
Wonderful. Now, Cindy, you are such a powerful speaker. You're very accomplished, and you work with other accomplished people as well. And this is specifically for my Advanced Profitability Lab members that I'm asking this question. We have people that are motivational speakers, got a great track record. Do you see people that are even their most successful make a mistake, and what is that mistake that you commonly see?
I love that question. You know, the majority of my clientele are actually well into millions, and they are CEOs and own companies and do all kinds of fantastic things. So one of the greatest things that I see them do is the way that they present on stage. Even though they're already speakers, there's little things that they're doing with their body language that's saying, I don't have power. So let me give you one of those things. And one of those things is the speaker that tends to back off on an important point. So they tend to step back. We need to be really careful. And when you see it visually, if you're thinking I have to get some of my clients to get them on film and actually like coach them so you can actually see this, because when you visually see this, like, oh my God. But they're talking and they're saying something really important and they take a step back. And from a standpoint subconsciously to the audience doesn't get what they're saying. They get what they're saying, but subconsciously it doesn't read as powerful. But if they're saying something that needs to be heard, they need to slow down their speech and step forward and bring the room to them, just like I'm doing right now. The only time you really want to see stepping back is if you're telling something that's deliberately to take away power. So for example, if I was telling the story of my client who went from 4 to 40%, I would say, so I have this client, Sophia, for example, and Sophia had and she was, I would step back on this phrase, she was losing so much business that she was only converting 4%. But after 5 weeks or 6 weeks of us working together, here's where I step forward, Lisa. I step forward and say she was converting 40%. Mm-hmm. How many of us would love to go from 4% to 40%? And that would be all in my power position stepping forward, where I'd step and ground that. And I would slow it down, and the audience would be like, oh, I got it. Whereas when I stepped back, it would be like she was doing everything she can. She was doing all these calls. She was only converting at 4%. And see, I'm allowing myself to spin and take away my power. So they're getting that my client was totally out of her power.
Got it.
So it's a very simple thing of deliberately knowing when to step forward, ground the voice down, bring them to you and slow down, versus let yourself spin to show the contrast when you step back. It's really powerful, and a lot of people don't think about that.
Yeah, that's a really great example of emphasizing a point and when to step forward and step back. That's brilliant. Thank you for that.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
I love this work. It's so amazing how little things make the biggest difference.
So tell us a little bit about what people will find or can find at your website, yourpersuasivevoice.com, and you have something that they can download.
Absolutely. So this is meant for corporate, but the information is equally valuable. And I know that you actually have people who have their own companies. It's really meant for people who want to be leaders in their industry. So it's definitely, if you're an entrepreneur and you want to be a leader, seen as a leader in what you do and your expertise, this is going to be great for you. It is called The New Paradigm of Creating Lasting Influence and Sustainable Profitability. And it goes into a lot, some of what I've talked about today, but a lot more. It's a really great insight paper. I've quoted Forbes and Psychology Today and really given insight further of how could you use your body language and your voice in a way that creates impact. How do you develop your content to be able to communicate effectively to the 8 types of different learners that you interact with on a daily basis so they really get your message they can be impacted in a bigger way? So it's a short paper. It's less than 10 pages, has lots of great graphics. It actually visually shows you 5 different body postures and which ones to not do ever and which ones you want to do and the 8 different learning styles. It's jam-packed, full of visuals. It's really great for those people that want to be leaders in their field, whether they're the starting out entrepreneur or they're already well into millions running their own company.
Wow, fantastic. Fantastic. Now we've got, and again, I just want to reiterate your website, yourpersuasive, PERSUASIVE, voice, voice.com. And Cindy, we've got a few minutes left. What, tell us about maybe 3 elements important to have in every speech.
I love that question. So, and this goes back to the 8 types of learners, which we don't have time to talk about, but what I will say is if there's 8 types of learners in your audience and anybody that you talk to, we all have different strengths in terms of our learning styles. So you want to have 3 elements to cover them. And the first element is that you need to be super clear on what that message and that concept is. And the second element is that you need to bring that message alive and ground it through some sort of an analogy, a story of some sort that really helps them to remember what that message is. So for the visual learners, that story is going to be imprinted in their brain. But then for people who are more mathematical learners, you definitely want to ground it with some kind of a tool. So whenever you talk about something, if we go back to this recording, I always gave a client example or some kind of a story. So I gave some kind of a story, usually a client story, but I also made sure to reiterate what the core message was, and I made sure to give a tool so that everybody listening, somebody would have picked it up in some way or another. So you always want to have those 3 elements because then people can really integrate it and they can feel like they got what the concept is, they've got a great story or something to remember, and on top of that, they've got an actionable step to take them further, which makes them trust you more, make them think that they can trust you to hire you to be able to go further with that.
Right. So the story that you used with the gentleman that was speaking and he would take a step back, that would be the story, but the tool that you grounded it in was, well, it depends on the circumstance whether you step forward to emphasize a point or step back, and that was the tool or technique that you recommended.
Oh, okay. No, that was, no, let me go back. So the story, no, the story with that client was around the sensory trigger. So his sensory trigger was kinesthetically moving and visually seeing a staircase and then using his words. So the story
I'm referring to the other guy who would step back at a point where he really should have.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Okay. No, that's okay. You've told a lot of stories in this, you know, in the short period of time, which all of them have just been amazing, by the way.
Thank you.
And they really, but is that what you meant by grounding it in a tool?
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Okay.
So I would give you the tool. You step forward with power, step back if you want to show less power, if you want to show defeat.
Got it. Wonderful.
So that would be the tool, and then I went through the story. Right, and then we talked about the overall concept of being able to persuade your audience by having, really knowing how what your PowerPoints are on stage.
Now, you say something a little controversial. You say it's a bad idea to want to make your full-time living from just speaking.
Yes and no. It depends on what level you're at. So at my level, I command $7,500 a talk. So if I did even one talk a month, I could live on that, although I don't. I do more than that. But, you know, it's a six-figure salary for me. So for me, I obviously have clients, but I could live just on my speaking career. So I say that because I have a ton of people that come to me who have beautiful stories, beautiful platforms, beautiful expertise, and they think that they're going to go out the gate and command the kind of pay that I do after doing this for 18 years. So they don't realize that there's a progression. There's actually four stages you need to go to get to the level. So right now I'm working to get to the stage four. By the end of the summer, I'm going to be at $10,000 a talk. So I'm currently crossing over into stage four. And so you have got the starting out phase, and then you've got the emerging speaker, and then you've got the professional speaker where I'm at, and then you have the celebrity speaker, someone who's gotten a lot of big press, a lot of big awards, starting at public recognition. Then you can start to charge the $10,000 level or more. So the reason why I say that is because a lot of people out of the gate a lot of the people that come to me are entrepreneurs, and they feel like they can just get that big pay, that professional level pay right away and have it be abundant at 3, 4, or 5 gigs a month right away. And that really takes several years to build up to, unless you are already famous. Like Donald Trump will get $1 million per talk, but he's Donald Trump, so he doesn't have to try to build his speaking platform. And then there's the other group of people who think that because they've got such a great overcoming story that they deserve to get that pay right away. And really, those opportunities are reserved for people who really paid their dues. You have to go through the progressions to get there. So when people say, I want to be a full-time speaker and make my salary from speaking, I say it's just not a good idea to do that unless you've paid your dues. It's going to take you several years to get to the point where you're making a substantial six-figure salary from it. You really need to add in coaching, consulting, training, workshops, something else, retreats.
Multiple income streams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like even with me, I mean, here's a perfect example. I could make my full six-figure salary from my speaking, but I'm just going to be really transparent. I've been really sick in the last year, had major surgery 5 weeks ago, and I'm not speaking right now. And can I tell you how unbelievably grateful I am that I have months off from work and I'm not going to start speaking again for another couple of months, and I'm still making a six-figure salary? My income has not reduced. Mm-hmm. In this time period, because I mean, and I am so glad, I am so glad that so it's just a perfect example of somebody like me that is making six figures from their speaking career, but had a bump in the road. Thankfully, I have my clients who I love and adore, and we get to play.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, and the key thing is you have to physically be there to speak, or speak over the phone. But if you're down and you can't, you have other additional income streams coming in that don't require you necessarily to be there, some of that passive income. And I think that's important, and that's something we would talk about in the Success Circle and at the Wake Up Profitable. So all my clients that are listening in are just kind of nodding their heads at this point saying, yep, I get your point. Yeah. So thank you for reinforcing that, Cindy.
No, it's really important. When I heard that I had to have surgery in March, I activated right away. I talked to my business strategist, and we're like, okay, I got to cancel all my speaking gigs. That was a lot of money to give up. I ended up giving them to other people and taking my 10% referral fee. So, it was so great because I was already taking on private clients, but I had a waiting list because I was so busy speaking. So I knew that I was able to get through this period because I was able to certainly just highlight that other piece of my business while this other piece of my business had to be put on hold. It is so smart to have. I just want to give you kudos as their strategist and their coach for making sure that they're getting multiple income streams, because it is essential. You don't want to be scattered, but you certainly don't want to be in a position where life happens and you have nothing left, right?
Right, exactly. Well, Cindy, we are out of time, and I want to thank you for the amazing tips, techniques, and stories that you've shared in the art of speaking, and I just so thank you. It's just been so packed full of stuff today that I am just so grateful to you, so thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. I am just so honored that I had the opportunity to play with you and all of your people, so thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and thanks, everybody, for listening in, and until next time, create a great life. Bye, everybody.